Hello, and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, as always, you can hop on Facebook and watch us there and chat with us there, or head over to YouTube. We love seeing you all there. So you know me. My name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia, and it's awesome to be here. Let's head over to Jason Richards for his introduction. Hello and good evening, Jason.
Hello and good evening. My name is Jason Richards. I'm a past master of a little lodge in Clifton, Virginia, known as Acacia Lodge number 16, and I'm a member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Excellent, excellent. Next up, Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson.
Hey, Robert Johnson here, Vsauce. Just kidding. Robert Johnson, past master, Waukegan 78, sitting secretary at Space Novum Lodge 1183 in Libertyville, Illinois, and host of the Once Came You podcast. Good to see you guys.
Excellent. And last but not least tonight, continuing on for this three-part series, is the one, the only Joe Martinez. Hooray!
Hello, Joe Martinez. Hello. Joe Martinez is from Manassas Lodge number 182 and Benjamin B. French Lodge number 15 in the District of Columbia and a whole bunch of other places. And I am the one guest host that doesn't have an awesome high-def camera, so I will see y'all in standard definition.
Yeah, you're not in your usual man cave there.
I'm not. I'm in the grown-up office.
I see. I see. Well, got to grow up sometime. So welcome. Welcome back. All right. Before we get into tonight's topic, I especially want to thank all the patrons who've been supporting the show over the years. You can head over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable, where we can hop in some private Facebook chats. Again, the Facebook group has been blowing up with a lot of really good discussions about books we're reading, different aspects of philosophy, pros and cons of different rites and orders. So yeah, it's if you want to really nerd out with us, hop on over there. I'd love to see you there. So this week's topic is on the rite of passage.
Thanking all of our Patreons.
Yes, that's it. We're going to fill the whole hour. You guys are awesome. And an hour's not enough. But we're also going to continue on with the three-part series of the rites of passage as defined by Arnold van Gennep. And so, again, as a quick recap, we are going to talk about the pre-transition and post-transition parts of the ritual, or also known as the liminal phases.
Liminal.
And so, again, I'm going to punt it over to Joe to kind of give us a brief overview of what those are before we dive into part two, which is the liminal phase. Go ahead, Joe.
Absolutely. So, like we talked about last week and a few weeks ago on the show, we're talking about Van Gennep's breakdown of rites of passage, not specifically related only to things like Masonic initiation or esoteric orders or things like that, but just general rites of passage, which could be sociological and anthropological, as well as, you know, tied to vocations or religious rites or, as many of us know, initiatic orders. And today we're going to talk about that threshold phase, that liminality phase. And I think it's one of the most interesting to talk about because it's not before you cross the threshold or after you cross that threshold into your new status in society, but right when you're at that point. So I think there's probably a lot of interesting points that are going to come up today as to what we all think being on the threshold means. And for those that are Masons, you've heard that term on the threshold before. So I think we'll unpack that a little bit and break down what that means for each of us.
Awesome. Thanks. So to dive right in, we talked last week about the preliminal phase, right? The as you are separating from the world to get ready to join something new. So if you haven't seen that one episode, go back and see that first and then join us here now where we are at the threshold. So what does that mean? Arnold van Gennep defines this phase as the liminal phase or the threshold phase. This is when you're actually on the razor's edge about to shift from one world to the next. So you are just right on the edge. You're not before, you're not after, you are during. And so this obviously comes into a lot of effect. We'll talk about what that means in a Masonic context. But before we get into that, we'll define it. We'll see what it looks like in a in other rites of passage. So from a definition perspective, this is also known the liminal phase. I think it's a Latinized version of kind of the word door or threshold. And so you're standing on the threshold, also known as the transition, because you're no longer separated. You're transitioning into the new. So you might hear us mix the word liminal or the word transition phase into our vernacular tonight.
Yeah, don't freak out.
Yep, don't freak out. Same thing. So I'll jump in with a brief description, and then Joe, I know you added some other stuff to the show notes as well, if you have those up. But there are some specifics of what when we're talking about rites of passage. You can apply these to lots of things, but specifically for rites of passage, you know you're in the transitional phase when there is a specific set of processes and sequences that have to be strictly observed, and everyone knows what to do and how. Okay, and then usually that is done under the authority of a master of ceremonies, some third-party person who's performing these rites or rituals or sequences of events in a specific order. So it's not the person or persons transitioning; it's done by a third party. Okay, so that's one way to kind of think about, is this thing a transition or not? No, it's if it's done strictly and repeatedly, and it's done through a master of ceremonies. And it can be destructive, right? It can be something that does physically separate you from your old past. As you're doing that event, we'll use some other examples of what does that mean as we go forward. Joe, what are some other definitions, concepts, pieces of this liminal phase?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you you get into some Van Gennep and also get into some Merceau Elliade, you know, who writes a lot about initiatic rites and things like that, the threshold, you actually touched on something and I think understated it a little bit when you talked about it being destructive. That transition point or that in-between point, it's I don't think we can use words to describe it adequately enough, because for many rites of passage that both Van Gennep and Elliade and other people who study rites of passage talk about, outside of the Masonic context, right, which in some places is really watered down and in some places it's really profound, but just speaking generally, that threshold point, you are no longer part of your old life, but you've not yet been accepted into the new. You are literally in between those worlds. So you belong to neither. So I get the sense, when done properly, it really is a destructive process because it breaks you away from your old life, or at least it's meant to. And it also doesn't fully allow you to receive all the benefits of that new life or your new status in society. So you really are just caught in between worlds. And that's got to be a really, really separational and painful process, one would imagine. You know,
it's empty, Jason. And vulnerable. Sorry, it's empty and vulnerable. I would dare say it's probably at the point, one of the points in your life where you are most vulnerable, because you have made that choice to cut yourself from the old. And now that you've done that, again, you're between worlds and you have not yet been accepted by the new.
Yeah, and a thought just came to mind too, thinking upon last week's episode where you do separate from your old world to prepare for this transition. In the separation phase, you could still bail out, you know? You could wuss out and not complete the transition. But now we are at the transition point where there is no going back. There is no point of no return. The act of transitioning is going to occur in this phase. Right. Yeah, so anything else you wanted to add to that, Joe?
Well, the wussing out thing I find interesting, right? Taking it from let's take the Masonic part of it. Yeah, you can wuss out at any point in during the degree process. But once you said that, I thought, I'm like, well, where is that threshold? during Masonic initiation. I would probably argue that there's more than one threshold, or you're reaching different points of threshold during different parts of the degree. So which one do you wuss out on that doesn't make you part of either society anymore, right? Where you're basically a pariah. Or if you've ever, what's that really awful movie, Divergent? Has anybody ever seen that?
Yes.
Where you have those outcasts that don't have a caste or a class, right? So they just hunt around through garbage and wear scraps for clothes and stuff, but they're not, they don't have a caste or a class in society anymore. So that's kind of that vibe I get. I'm like, if I wuss out, but I'm not crossed the threshold, where am I in the process? Do I root around in garbage cans for the rest of my life? You know?
Yeah. I mean, and then you would have to consider, do you repeat that process again? Because you need to separate again in order to start that over. You just can't jump right to the threshold per se. Mm-hmm. So let's shift gears now. We'll talk a little bit about what are some non-Masonic examples of the threshold stage, of the liminal stage of rites of passage. Because you know it helps to have some other analogies that we can relate to, and one that Van Gennep talks a lot about is funerals, the funeral service, right? Where the funeral is not for the dead, it's for the living, right? And so it is the act of closure. When you think about the body has already been separated from the family to be prepared, to be embalmed, and all that, and now, before it gets interred, cremated, whatever, right? Then now this is again performed by a master of ceremonies, usually a priest, right? That confers either last rites or just performs the service, and it is a set of steps that everyone goes through when they die, and so it has to be performed kind of in order, and then you know then the body is laid to rest somewhere, and so that's a really clear example of a liminal phase in society where you have to transition from life to death to then its final outcome. Any thoughts on that or any other examples?
I think with a funeral, though, it's an interesting example only in that transition is not, it's not really for the dead, right?
Absolutely.
Like, right. It is a psychological a series of steps and rituals to allow for solvency or completion or, you know, for the people closure. Who you're leaving behind. Yeah, closure. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Jason. I think
the person
also,
going through the rite is not cognizant of it.
Or
right. I mean, Or yeah, right. Like maybe they're off in the ether or whatever, watching down, and it's a pleasant sight or whatever. But I can't imagine how pleasant it would be to be watching people grieve over you. You know, thinking about this whole idea of transition, I'm really struck, and I'm curious if Joe, if you have some additional thoughts on this, or maybe workarounds or some way to help me think about it, because I know this liminal phase implies. Like there's this real thin razor's edge. Let's just envision a stone, right? And the stone is at the quary, it's on the block, and the chisel is on it, and the hammer's coming down, right? This is all threshold. And then there's just this real small sliver of time where the hammer, the chisel, and the stone come together in a very explosive moment, and that real small bit of time right between the shearing off of whatever you're breaking and that moment of impact, that real small sliver of time, that's like the liminal. And in the large scheme of things, I guess this is a loss, right? It's like you're taking off the old. But I'm wondering too how we think about this in terms of reality, right? Like there's never a real loss. So what is it really doing?
Well, that was probably the most profound question I've heard all month. So I'm going to try to start answering that as quickly as possible. But you bring up an excellent point. I think that And we tend to look at things like, you know, Van Gennep's phases of rites of passage and thing. And 90% of the time we look at it through the Masonic context, right? And I know John was trying to bring up other examples of it. But to your point, I think that we don't realize how short and succinct that threshold point is for, right? It's not a long process like your preliminal phase or your postliminal phase. It's really a you know, like you're flipping an electric switch, right? It is a small, brief moment in time. And most of us don't spend the time, energy, or effort to think about what just occurred, right? Because you're never thinking about the now. You know, when people say live in the now, I want to just punch them in the eyeball because now's already passed by the time you thought of it, right? That's the way that time works. But to your point, talking about time, you get my physics juices flowing. Time is relative when it comes to those moments of transitions in our lives, right? I don't know how it was for each of you, but I know when going back to the masonry example, you know, when I was blindfolded, that time seemed to pass very, very, very slowly. And there were other parts in the degree, most notably the Master Mason degree, where you don't know what's going on, and time seems to go very slowly for you, right? So to answer your question, I would say, I think time is relative for each person based on the type of experience that they're receiving, whether it's Masonic or not. I mean, I was thinking about other examples, and what popped into my head was graduating high school. You know, once you cross that stage and you receive your diploma, boom, that is your liminal point, and it has come and gone, and now you're a graduate. You know, so they really are brief moments in time. But I think that I don't think we're built or trained or use our cognitive abilities to really think about how we actually have passed a transition point or that we're living in a transition point at the moment because they're so brief. So it's kind of a bummer. But I think that we probably could do a better job, I think, especially when it comes to initiation, to demarcate those points of transition and say, now you've come to a transition point. You know, yeah. Now you're not.
And boundaries are important too, right? Because like, how do you know, like, are you in or are you out? And so, I mean, this comes up, especially when I'm coaching, you know, younger candidates, where I ask them, so at what specific point did you become a Mason? Right. And there is an answer in Virginia, mm-hmm. Right? Jason, what's the answer? Right. When you finish taking an actual obligation, right, where you're committing, you know, you're swearing some oaths to the society, then you are addressed as brother for the very first time after that. And so, I mean, that is a clear transition point where you are Mr. So-and-so before and you are brother after. And so I really like that because that, to me, is a very defining point. Yeah, up until that point, you are not a brother yet. You're going through part of the ritual. You're going through some of the degrees. And again, you can still be separated from that at any point up to that. And then only after the specific line has been crossed, then you are now known as a Brother Mason. So I think that's pretty cool. Because that way you eliminate all the redundancy of or ambiguity of, well, I kind of sort of went through with the process, but like, no, or you're a brother or you're not. Joe?
And you're absolutely right. And my question for you would be, though, how many people, the very microsecond that they become a brother, do they actually realize that?
Yeah. Probably very few.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And you're dead on because I've heard that, you know, during mentoring sessions or during catechism sessions, whatever you want to call it, I've heard people say that to their candidates or their, you know, their new initiates every single time. Like, you became a brother at this point. And they're like, oh crap, I didn't realize that, because they don't realize that at the time, you know, because it's such a quick transition.
So quick.
Going back to your point about boundaries. I don't think we define those limits, you know, as well as maybe we should, because you don't have that realization until after. And I know you probably didn't when you first became a brother, but now that you're more learned and erudite and older and wiser, now you know that. But you know, you passed.
Yeah, it's like if you have like some philosophical bro in your lodge who takes the time to like explain some of these steps. You know, maybe you've got a great senior deacon or, you know, somebody who is with you, right? And maybe they might give you some quiet words, you know, along the journey. And I think that's important. But for a lot of guys, I feel like, A, you know, you talked about when is that liminal point? And I think for a lot of guys, maybe that liminal point is all-encompassing all time for them, because at any point they think they could just not be a Mason anymore. But the reality is, right, like we cannot unring a bell.
Yeah.
But I guess the flip side to even that is that for some people, they may have gone through something, but they still didn't hear the bell. That's, you know what I mean? Like, that's a really interesting concept to me, because I think also for a lot of guys, they feel like, I became a Mason when my dues card came. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird...
It's when you can actually receive the benefit, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a time in between, you know, that liminal phase and the post-liminal phase where then, you know, you have reintegrated in, and I know we're getting into next week's topic, but I don't care. You have reintegrated into your new society, but after that, then you can finally reap the benefits. I still think there's a period of time in the post-liminal phase before you can truly reap the benefits of that rite of passage.
I don't disagree with you at all, and I think to
you could just say you're right.
But I don't want to. But okay. I think to your point, I think we could bring it back to the conversation of, you know, being at the transition point, because to John's point, if there were more reflection time around the liminal phase or the threshold point, then people might have a better realization of what process it is they're going through. But back to Robert's point, yeah, there are people, and we don't have to, we could take the masonry hat off, you know, if they're joining the Kiwanis Club or they're joining this or that, you know, and it's basically just a, hey, I got my membership card, I got my special placard so I can park closer to you at Walmart, that kind of thing, whatever you joined.
We're keeping the metric system down.
I know, I love the metric system. You totally made me brain fart, thank you. But my point was,
other people will get the Simpsons reference.
Okay. But once Jason stops talking about the Simpsons, I will finish up and say finally that.
Hey, did you know about the? No.
And commercial break.
No, Joe. So, please continue.
No. totally lost the point. Hey, thresholds are thresholds. That is the point.
So here's another real world example that people can relate to, right? Weddings, when you get married. Right, there is a transition point where you are no longer single, you are now married, right? So we talked a little bit earlier about like the engagement phase, that would be preliminal, but then you do have, you know, the liminal phase of you're actually saying I do, you're exchanging rings, and you're walking out the church as husband and wife, right? So that is an actual transition that happens.
I feel like one of the greatest examples in the real world today of not today. In the 90s, right? It's the modem. It's the dial-up.
Yes.
When the modem, like you clicked enter, all right? You made the choice and then you hit.
And you got the handshake. Right? Yeah.
That's it. And then it's
the handshake.
Welcome, reintegration. You've got mail.
Mm-hmm. Where's and the some part people still where you have to that. Hide the modem noises from your parents at 1 o'clock in the morning? And you like muffled and with like towels and sweatpants and stuff. What phase is that?
Buffering. What phase is that? The hidden phase.
Yeah. The hidden phase. It's a cult.
It's called
And then of course, I mean, we could go lots of other rites of passages too. But one big one that I think a lot of people can relate to from a transition perspective is purgatory. Right. You know, a lot of Catholics believe that if you haven't completely been absolved of all your sins, like, you know, babies, you know, if they die young, then they go to purgatory. So it's not heaven, it's not hell. It's a holding phase. It's somewhere in the middle. You're not either one or the other. Joe, you're making a face.
Yeah, I'm just trying to recall in my mind where that is actually in the Bible.
So Catholics believe that there's this place called purgatory that is a liminal phase between the two. But yes.
Oh, I know. And I've talked about it on the show that I was a born Roman Catholic, ethnic Roman Catholic, like did the Latin Mass as an altar boy Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally with you. I was being very, very sarcastic in my question. But I want to go back to the marriage thing because it actually kind of rang a bell for me in terms of the metaphysical aspect of it. Like, you know, when depending on how you were married, like my wife and I, we were married at the Justice of the Peace. Our engagement and marriage was, I think, 3.5 weeks apart. So, you know, we were on the fast track. So, we roll hard. So, you know, those that get married in a religious ceremony or, you know, a tribal ceremony, things like that, most of your
we marriage had three ceremonies, pastors.
Dang, you are uber. You're like extra. That's what the kids say, right? Extra? You're extra. I got married in the driveway of the Justice of the Peace's house because it was a Sunday and he was not coming in to work. So that's how we rolled. Anyway.
Romantic.
Yes. But what I was going to say was when you were talking about that, all I could think of was the different, religious ceremonies around marriage where they talk about where you're two people and at some point you suddenly become one, right? And that just makes my metaphysical brain explode, right? Because two becoming one, you're going back to creation. And I think I really like you said it. My kids are still up, so I can't say coitus around the house. Because then the little guy will say, what's coitus? You know, and that's the thing. So, I think that harkens all the way back to, you know, the allegories of creation, right? Where, you know, one became two and then two is becoming one again. And so, yeah, to your point, Jason, coitus is a threshold point. Some longer than others.
Y'all seen Dracula 2000? It was a terrible movie, but did you ever see that one?
I have.
Oh, man. What a great idea of purgatory, though. So this guy, basically Dracula is explained in the movies. Total spoiler alert. If you've never seen it, here it is. Dracula is Judas. And so Judas can't go to heaven, even though he was a disciple. He also can't go to hell because he kills Jesus or like is responsible for it. So in this, his purgatory is to become the undead. It's a pretty wild movie, but a cool purgatory reference nonetheless.
Wow, that's interesting to think about. And now you've added a movie to my queue, so thank you.
Oh, sure.
He didn't say it was good.
I didn't say where in the queue either.
You have to watch it. It's pure rubbish, though. I have seen it. I'm still trying to recall. Did we decide that purgatory was a threshold or not?
According to Van Gennep, it is a...
It's like the DMV.
Transition. Yes.
The line at the DMV.
Well, that kind of spits in the face at our... Hey, thresholds happen very instantaneously, except if you're at the DMV.
Where time seems to go on forever.
That's right.
Well, so again, we did talk about the hoodwink and how, you know, time can seem to pass very, very slowly. And so, you know, there is a threshold point that is nearly instantaneous, but leading up to that threshold and then crossing over to it, I can imagine that, you know, with self-reflection and like introspection after the fact, you might be able to identify that nexus. But as it's happening, I think it's happening so fast that you can't.
But to your point, I think you have to have that Obi-Wan or that mentor figure who kind of guides you in that right direction, right? I don't know. Sure. I mean, as enlightened as we all are, I don't know how much we can, you know, take in all that information that we only see once and only see a little bit unless we go see a degree again and then process it and actually realize it. And I know, you know, people have told me that all the time, and we tell new people, new Masons, that all the time. okay, you're not going to remember anything of what you just saw, but next time we have a debrief, come and sit and watch. And it, then it's, that becomes your reflection point, I think. But again, to
well, Robert, that's part of the post-liminal process.
Agreed.
Yeah. That we'll talk about next week. So
so with that, like, you think about like a scientist as your conductor of ceremonies, right? And what if the degrees, this will be for everybody who's having a hard time, let's get material. So for some nerds out there, material nerds, like you, solid, gas, and plasma, your liminal phases are like sublimation and ionization. And you got to have, yep, you got to have a scientist who's love like, it, okay, let's move to the gas phase. You are going through sublimation. You're being ionized now, you know? So there you go. That's it. That's for the physics of it. I, you know, if you wanted to put it that way, I'm leaving out liquid because nobody wants liquid.
You did. Yeah. I want to be ionized.
We go backwards. Like, what did that call? It's recombination.
Ooh. Makes sense. Okay, so without exact details, what part or parts of the Masonic ritual comprise the transition phase? And I alluded to one already, which was specifically
I did too.
The obligation. What are some other? And again, there could be multiple ones.
Yeah, see, my feeling is I'm gonna give the catch-all answer and piss you off. I think there's a different liminal phase in each degree. And it's not Bob.
One per or multiple?
Well, at least one per. I can find a different one in each degree.
Yeah, see, that doesn't hurt my head because they are three separate ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
With different before and after effects.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with that statement.
Yeah, I mean, the easy, obvious one is your last degree is obviously when you're part of the dramatic play and a dramatic thing happens. I think that's a very terminal point of transition. Let's go to my favorite, the fellowcraft. I think when you're physically taken through a threshold, in most jurisdictions, you're walked through a particular threshold, and it's called a threshold. I think that is a liminal point because it's there where you start to ingest all that knowledge, right? Now you're told this is the things that you're supposed to know. Before everything, it's preparatory, right? The door and walking up to it and everything else is prep time. But then you're told what the things we're supposed to know as a Mason and how we're supposed to know them and then ultimately how we're supposed to utilize them. So for me, and you know, I love those things that freestand, those two things that those freestanding things in our lodges. I talk about them a lot. But for me, that's definitely a threshold point. Because it has a physical representation because it's you're walking that person through them.
Yes, you're physically crossing a threshold at some points of the Masonic experience.
So I think about the liminal phase as that transition from separation into reintegration, that quick light switch from, you know, complete separation, being alone, not with your brothers, not able to see your brothers, and then, you know, that liminal phase happens real quick, and then all of a sudden you're reintegrated into the group. And that to me is, you know, the primary liminal phase that I see that happens at the same place in each three of the degrees.
Yeah, I think I'm picking up what you're laying down, Jason, for me. But if not, you know, I would take it maybe I would say your affirmation of ascent. It's this thing that you do if you say okay. And to Joe's point, yeah, I could see that too. And what's interesting about your point, Joe, is that it's a more original and kind of, I don't want to say it's a more original in terms of actual age, and it is literally bringing you into a new scope of knowledge, right? It's this new, it's like Freemason University, next 20 minutes. My brother, Masonry is considered under two denominations, you know, and you're going to be blowing some minds. So, yeah, I like that too. But man, the way you guys are talking about it, it's almost like there's a million of them. I don't know how to pick just one.
Almost like it's rather subjective.
Yeah, and so, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the, you know, separation phase, because I always threw a Back to the Future reference in last week, because if you look at the trilogy of the greatest trilogy of all time, the Back to the Future trilogy, and you see that there's a story arc per movie, but then there's a greater story arc across all three. And so you can have multiple setups and payoffs, right? So we see Marty playing the guitar in the beginning, and then he ends up, you know, playing Johnny B. Goode at the Fish Under the Sea dance. So that's a payoff, but then he still carries that forward through that through other movies, right? And so much in fact that, you know, Marty McFly has the whole love obsession at the beginning of the first movie, and then Doc is the love obsessed teenager at the end of the third movie. So there can be multiple setups and payoffs, multiple cycles of transition of preliminal, liminal, postliminal, preliminal, liminal, postliminal as you go through. And just to be perfectly explicit of what I'm talking about, there are, at least in Virginia, multiple times where the candidate goes back out. He leaves the lodge room to wait for another phase. So in effect, the different acts of the play happen, and then you do it all over again in the second act, you do it all over again in the third act. Right. So these are...
Oh, man. John, that's what I'm thinking. So you just opened up a whole nother book. I think we got to have an episode like pop culture initiation phases, or not even pop culture, but anytime we've gone to a play or even music that has different acts or parts to it, I'm just wondering, like, holy cow, I got to break out some Baroque and listen to different movements and see what's happening. This is, yeah, I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, like the movie Inception, right, where it's a dream inside of a dream inside of a dream, and so you're still accomplishing the before, during, and after, but you're doing it at multiple levels.
It's like trying to catch a bullet with a smaller bullet whilst riding a horse.
I would say you got me thinking, probably anything that Hans Zimmer has scored probably has like the most amazing threshold points of any. You pick any of his movies. Yeah. You know?
Probably.
He does have threshold points in every single one of his scores. You know what I mean? It's like you've got that before anticipation, and then you've got the climax or the crescendo. You could do a whole week's worth of stuff just on Hans Zimmer and Rites of Passage.
His score for Sherlock.
Yes. Why don't we put that as our Masonic music? Let's do that in Lodge next time. Next year, how about the master of Manassa Lodge? Figure that one out.
So, funny guy, we actually did do a program on music, and we took some of the songs from Interstellar. Yes, especially the ones with, if you've seen the movie, best movie ever. The ones that have the ticking clock in them, we have found that they actually do heighten the anxiety in the room quite a bit. So we'll just leave it there.
I love it. Oh, man. You got me wanting to go down this rabbit hole right now, but yes. So what is the most important aspect of transition in the context of the Masonic initiatic experience? Why is this effect of transition so important for the lodge, for the candidate, or for the Masonic experience overall?
I'd have to say the most important aspect is harkening back to what Jason said, where you finally sit down and you acknowledge it. You know, once the magic happens and the bells ring and things happen and you're suddenly no longer just a schlub, you're a brother, you don't realize what's going on at that time. But after some good, careful reflection, when you finally acknowledge that and internalize that, then you have that aha moment that it's like, okay, I've made a transition. And hopefully, one would hope that you take those lessons and start to live a certain way, or maybe you don't. You know, maybe you just come for the green beans and the chit chat and the coffee, but that's its intent. So unfortunately, I think since things do happen so quickly, you know, and we don't, you know, our Masonic ritual is not laid out by Arnold Vanganette, you know, so they're not these demarcation points. But I think that once you start to acknowledge and internalize the things that are happening to you, then to your point, John, I think you do get multiple threshold points if you can acknowledge them.
Jason?
Robert? I was just going to say, like, I think in terms of Masonic initiation, it is exactly what Joe said. Also, this you know, self-realization, but it's also a proclamation. Harkening back to what you all were talking about earlier, you know, this thing is a loss, and a loss implies like you know, some violence or something. For all you tarot nerds, maybe it's like a five of cups. Right, loss of three, gain of two. Whatever the case is, it's a loss. But then it's also it's this realization too. It's a realization point that although you did leave something behind, there is something now ahead of you that, again, with physics, sorry, like us for Dylan, with, it's like, David Bohm's, Limitless Potential, or The Implicate Order. I pushed up my glasses for you. There's a whole nother side of potential that now lays before you. And then what, you know, we will eventually get into what comes next week. So I don't want to jump into that, but that is part of that potential. A choice.
So, for Robert, so Ridley interrupted me.
The interrupter has become the interruptee.
Ah, curses! The tables have turned.
How the turn
they're round, so we couldn't tell. So for me, I have to echo what Joe said, where there's that stage in the transition where you have reintegrated and you're not aware of it yet. And you're just kind of like, oh, wait a second, what just happened? What does this mean? And that realization, whether it be through introspection, self-reflection, mentorship, what have you, that you have now crossed over into, you know, out of the old and into the new, is that moment of discovery is the most important piece of the process.
Yeah, I'll build on that, because I think it's to build on what I said earlier too, that the boundary has to be clear, right? That you need to make it explicit that the transition has occurred. There's kind of a funny phrase about being half pregnant, right? You can't be half pregnant. You got to be all in or all out. And so the better we do, whether it's explicit in the ritual or not, the better that we do of defining what is the old life and what is the new life. Again, where, for example, where you can now address someone as brother, that becomes a defining moment that the boundary is clear, the boundary has been crossed, and the old life is no longer part of yours. So I think that that's an important aspect of why we have these transition phases. Joe?
Well, you just made something magical pop into my head, which is, and I've heard you guys talk about it, candidate preparation, right? We, in general, do a very lackluster job, most places, not all, of candidate preparation. And it's not just taking him into the prep room, him or her into the prep room, and doing the things you need to do that are prescribed for ritual. Like, I know some places, some lodges, where your candidates are waiting for months and months at a time before they're given a petition, right? And they're told to read things, and they're told to come discuss things, and they're told to come meet other brothers and start to experience what this new quote unquote life could be for them, you know, as opposed to the, hey, I walked in, you know, two guys who I had coffee with signed my petition, and then boom, I became a Mason the next day, you know, in a 1 day class. You know, so when we're talking about preparing people, I don't think it's just the prescribed stuff. It's finding out what reasons they are to be there, whether they're a good fit for you, and you know, if they're really ready to think about the process the way that we think about the process. You know, and it goes back to what you guys have always said, you know, do you want members or Masons? So.
Boom, love it. Okay, so now we're at that point of the show where we get to the final question, and the final question is very similar to the one last week, which is, which part of this transition phase of the rite of passage is the most meaningful to you? Is it the physical, the mental, the emotional, or spiritual, or something else? So which part of the transition, which part of the crossing the threshold is most meaningful to you? Could be physical, could be mental, could be emotional, spiritual, or something else. And we'll start with Jason Richards.
So, for me, it has to be the emotional. Back a couple years ago now, I took the AFIRO-B assessment, which is the Fundamental Interpersonal Relations Orientation. And that is something, you know, put on, you know, with, by the folks at like the Myers-Briggs. And it assesses, you know, your desired and undesired interactions with others and how you relate to others. And, I scored very high on inclusivity. And so I like belonging to a group. I like feeling included. I like including others. And so for me, the, you know, going back to my first degree, you know, even though I think I've mentioned this, it was right before back surgery, and I was on some very, very heavy pain medications. You know, going back to my first degree and, the emotion I felt, you know, when I could see my brothers again, and then going back downstairs and, you know, being addressed as Brother Richards downstairs, and the emotional connection that I just, the heightened emotional connection that I had with everybody in that room, was the most important to me, because that was really that, because of that connection, I knew that I had crossed the threshold into the post-liminal stage.
Nice. Love it. All right, let's head over to Robert for his thoughts.
I think for me, it's mental. Just like you think about elements, if you're occult-minded, if you believe that you have a power, you know, to manifest, right, through whatever that, you know, journey might take you, however you justify these steps along that realization, there is, for many people, a need to, you know, a master doesn't need a physical manifestation of a thing to believe it. So, but I would say, like, a normal person might need, if you're a fan of, like, you know, Japanese animation, right, there's always a flourish, right? Some kind of weird thing you do, right, when you win, or at the end of a video game. If you remember Soda Popinski from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out or Punch-Out, right, he, like, flexes his pecs when he wins or right before a match. These are all, like, these flourish things. But in this way, an actual mental cause, a physical thing that happens to my mind, is a really important element of this liminal phase, because I'm thinking it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a real thing. It has a real physical effect on me. And so through that mental process, then, it is a flourish of a sorts. Like, it is the thing that makes it real for me, is that I have this new mental attitude, and this is a physical thing that always tends to manifest in a way that evolves our thinking. And then it affects me spiritually later, because it's just a really difficult transition, a mental process. It's a breaking, you know, you're changing the way you're asking someone to change the way they think. Fundamentally, we are given a set of charges and things to, and tenets and cardinal virtues to, for the first time as an adult, you know, your dad's not telling you to do this. Your mom's not harping at you, right? The organization you freely joined of your free will and accord is now pushing on you a set of virtues that you're demanding from you, right? As a brother, you are to be this. And if you're not, you know, don't claim to be a Mason, essentially. And so this physical kind of manifests in this terrible dread, breaking of, you know, psychological paradigms. The silver cord is cut. It's loosed, whatever you want to say. And it leads into the spiritual transformation. And for me, Freemasonry is very spiritual. You know, that's where I operate in my, you know, they say Masonry is different to a lot of different people. For me, Freemasonry is a very spiritual organization. And so, you know, going into spiritual is a thought process, philosophy. The thing that precedes that directly for me is a mental, a direct physical, mental change.
Interesting. Love
That's
it.
All I have to say about that. Where's my Dr. Pepper?
That was awesome. Thank you, RJ, because I think you really were able to codify a lot of what we were all thinking. And so nothing better than Joe to try to follow that act.
I'm not going to, so I will be most brief, because, yeah, brains explode on that one. If I had to pick one of the four, I would have to gravitate more towards spiritual. And to Jason's point earlier, where he talked about reflection, I think that for me, I physically passed those points of transition. I was told them, so I mentally ingested them. But I think for me, when I internalized it and made that realization, was when I noticed how it affected me spiritually. And, you know, I'm like RJ, where I do find a lot of spirituality in my Masonry. And I know many don't, but I think that once I've committed to make Masonry a bigger part of my spiritual life, I'm better able to find those points of transition, or find those differentiators between the way I was yesterday and the way I hope to be tomorrow. And I guess add little bits of threshold into my daily life, right? I mean, we're always growing and we're always changing. You know, a degree that I took 16 years ago, was not the end all be all. You know, it's a process, to your point. It's micro cycles of processes where, you know, you hope to be a little bit better than you were yesterday. And that's the goal and that's the point. So for me, if it informs my spirituality and I feel a closer connection to you know, what I think lies on the other side of that last threshold, then, you know, that's a win-win for me. So that's my answer.
Well, thank you, Joe. All right. And so to wrap things up, you know, I will probably say again, as I went through it, it was probably more of a mental transition than a spiritual one. Of course, now looking back on it, I tend to align with everything else that you guys have said. But as I was going through it, a lot of my analysis, or a lot of my research, or a lot of my transformation starts out in the academic space and moves to either an emotional or a spiritual plane after that. So I always try to find, well, Where's the source for this, or where was this interpreted, or what, you know, where do these virtues come from? So I tend to gravitate by default to the mental, the intellectual aspect, right? The swords in tarot. And I try to start at that level to decipher what's going on analytically, and then see where it takes me. Like, okay, how can I apply that, you know, maybe in a spiritual sense? And so going back to the original question of which part of this inclusion of a transition experience, a crossing threshold experience in the Masonic experience becomes meaningful to me, it probably started out as mental. I'm a Mason now, right? That is a literal fact. It's an academic fact that I survived through this initiation, and then I had now earned the title of a Mason. Even if it was just an entered apprentice, I'm still as a Mason. So that was how it affected me when I first went through it, that I could, you know, dust my shoulders off and be proud that I had made it through that process. And then, of course, many years later, reflecting upon it and seeing the degrees multiple times, as always, you get something different every time you see it. With that, I want to thank you all very much for watching. We'll see you next week for part 3, post-liminal rites or integration. So stay tuned for that. As always, you guys are awesome, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.